B-Pod Studios.
It's Boston's most listened to afternoon radio program.
This isn't funny. This is sports.
Felger.
We are not here to laugh.
En masse on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Mel, what was your reaction to the trade?
Yeah, not shocked. I think that, you know, Bill Belichick knows what they need there. I mean, Mac Jones late in the year hit a little bit of a wall. You got to get him targets. You got him guys, get weapons. He'll put the ball on you. Mac's accuracy is unbelievable. I mean, he can hit the bullseye, okay? He can put the ball on the receiver. Devontae Parker needs to maximize that ability on a consistent basis. He had some great moments, but it kind of leveled off. So I think you stay on the field for 16 games, provide Mac Jones a weapon in that passing game where they're lacking. I still think at 21 you draft a receiver. Obviously, corner they've addressed a little bit, could go that route as well, but take advantage of the depth at this position, get two receivers out of this draft to go along with Parker. New England, Todd and Vince, is in a tough spot. I mean, they're looking at a division now with, I think, the Jets ascending. If Zach Wilson moves up from where he was and keeps developing last three games, he didn't throw an interception. Think about where Buffalo is. They're solid as a rock with their superstar quarterback. And Miami's done everything to make Tua a great quarterback there. Will Tua be great? We'll see. But they're doing everything they can, Todd, around him. New England needs to have a strong draft because, you know, change with Josh McDaniels now in Las Vegas. And you got teams I think are going to get better. Will the Patriots, you know, climb up and remain there where they have been and where they were with Mac Jones until Buffalo proved how much better they are? So I think it's going to be a very, very critical draft for the Patriots. Adding Parker's good, but they got to get one or two receivers in this draft, and I think one at 21 when they pick there. And if, do they move? Do they get Jameson Williams? What happens there, Todd? It's going to be fun to see how the Patriots attack this draft.
That's Mel Kiper, ESPN, saying even with Devontae Parker, Pat still should come away from this draft with two drafted receivers. Two, not one, but two, and one at 21. I know you disagree with that, Anthony.
Well, I'm not taking one at 21, but I said before they signed Parker, I wanted two receivers in the draft. Now that they have Parker here, could you talk me into one? Sure, but the overall longer-term problem at the position still exists. You know, Parker's 29. Jacoby Myers is no superstar. I like Kendrick Bourne. But, you know, Nelson Agholor to me is a lost cause, borderline anyway. So you tell me you want to take two on the idea that you would hit on one and have a longer-term receiver for Mac Jones? I'm in. They need to take a receiver in this draft. Yes, at least one.
I think they should be open to it. If someone like Jameson Williams, the kid out of Alabama that was looked at as a top 10 pick, drops to them at 21, has the knee injury, yeah, I think you take him. Because, so we've all sat here and wondered what the hell their offense is going to be, right? Well, with Jakob Johnson telling the German radio station or whatever, like, hey, they're not going to use the fullback anymore now that he's in Las Vegas, I have to assume they're going to have him throw more. And if you're going to have Mac Jones throw more, well, you need as much weaponry around him as possible. It just basically worked for the Bengals. And if they think that Mac Jones is a poor man's Joe Burrow, then you got to go try to get him his Ja'Marr Chase. Yeah, so they should be open to it.
And I just think there's just so many good receivers now coming out every year at all different levels, all different shapes and sizes and skill sets. And there's so many good players coming out now at that position. You've got to get in on it. The rest of the league is, you've got to get in on it. And if you've missed in the past, you've just got to hope you break your slump eventually. I've mentioned this many times. You did at tight end. They had a thing at tight end where for 10 years they drafted the position and, you know, barely leaked a drop, unless you consider Dan Graham and Ben Watson anything special, which I don't. I think those were just guys.
They were just fine.
But, you know, they kept drafting, and they finally hit on Gronkowski and Hernandez, same year. So you just got to hope it clicks eventually at receiver. There's just too many good ones coming out. They've got to get in on it. It's the league. It's the sport. It's what it is. You just got to do it.
Passing league, quarterback league, you need a special freak for Mac Jones because they don't have that.
He needs a guy. Do you know, I saw this stat. Maybe it was ESPN. I can't remember where I saw it. Maybe someone could check it for me. They did not have a 100-yard receiving game at all last year.
Individually, you mean?
Not one individual on the Patriots had a 100-yard receiving game all year long. That is the first time
that
has happened in the NFL since 2009. And I think it was the Rams. I think that was when Josh McDaniels was their offensive coordinator. Do I have that right, or was he still in Denver that year?
He was still.
Maybe he was in Denver
that year.
It was
10 that I thought he went
there.
Yeah,
right. So either way.
Oh, you know who loves that stat?
Oh, the boobs out there.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, but, I mean, think of that. They didn't have a single 100-yard receiving game. And that's the first time that's happened in the league in well over a decade. He needs a guy. Mac Jones needs a guy. And so maybe it could be Parker. Maybe. I don't know. You know, did Miami ever look at him that way? Did they ever try and use him that way? I would like to see the Patriots try and use him that way, because I just think he needs a security blanket in some way, shape, or form. Did you read Andrew Callahan today in the Herald?
I think I did read Andrew Callahan. Tell me what the headline was.
Well, Parker provides options, and this is how he's used. And like, this is really, this gets into the weeds.
I did read this.
But it's kind of interesting, kind of. Despite missing three games last season, no Patriots receiver took more snaps at the X position than Nelson Agholor. The veteran speedster regularly aligned as the lone receiver on the weak side of the offensive formation and was entrusted to win one-on-one or draw the attention of a deep safety. He rewarded that Patriots trust, he said sarcastically, by becoming their least efficient option at the position, averaging just 1.3 yards per route, lowest among wideouts who saw at least five targets in the NFL. So,
five targets? Wow, that's a low bar.
Right, so it's like everybody.
What?
Anybody.
That counts you.
So right, exactly. Anybody who, again, among five wideouts who say at least five targets. So, I mean, just think of that. They would isolate him. They put three receivers over here, Agholor over there. He would have one-on-one coverage and still did squat. And, you know, still, I would say, didn't do much to draw that safety over there, because it's not like the Pats were a prolific. And I know their numbers would say otherwise, but I don't think they were a very dangerous passing team most games, at least with their wideouts. So I think that's going to be Parker's slot here. That's going to be Parker's spot. You go over there and you play one-on-one. According to Sports Info, Parker ran the second most routes from an isolated position across the league in 2019. That was his big year, trailing only Saints All-Pro wideout Michael Thomas. He also saw more targets at the X than any other receiver in the league and converted a staggering 90% of his isolated receptions into first downs or touchdowns. That ranked third in the NFL. 2019, his coach was also Chad O'Shea, who was a former Patriot assistant under Belichick.
Correct.
And ran at least, you know, a semblance of the Patriots offense.
Before they fired him.
Before Flores fired him. Exactly. Anyway, in 2019, O'Shea loved isolating Parker in key situations, third down, red zones, two-minute drills, via those 3-by-1 formations that forced defenses to commit most of their defensive backs to the opposite side. Working one-on-one, Parker would often out-muscle his defender on a slant or win a back shoulder fade. His 9 touchdowns ranked 3rd in the league. So add that all up. The Patriots did that last year a lot, 3-by-1. Agholor, the lone guy on one side, drawing one-on-one coverage on the weak side of the formation. At least win your one-on-one and get some easy receptions over there, or at least draw the safety away from coverage. Agholor did neither. Parker, when he was with a Patriots coach 2 years ago, specialized in that very thing. Swap out Parker for Agholor in that spot and just upgraded the thing pretty dramatically. That's sort of their thought.
So, look, I like the idea of
it. Me too. I'm with it. Fine.
Look, based on what we've seen, this is what Parker is good at. And I think there was a part of that story, too, where they talked about going home on third downs and things like that. Because if you put him out there one-on-one and he can get any sort of angle or leverage on a defender, he's going to catch it. You can't get around him. He's big.
Yeah, but this still sounds to me like a sell job on their scheme rather than the talent level of players. I mean, do you look at the names on their roster, specifically at wide receiver, and still look at it now with the addition of Devontae Parker and say, oh, no, they're good to go. I don't.
Well, Murray, but isn't it both? So, in other words, okay, if they had run this same scheme with N'Keal Harry, would it work?
No.
Okay, so that's the point. Devontae Parker can make this work. So, yes.
But he's not the true missing piece. He helps. You still have to add like a freak.
Agreed. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Agreed.
No.
I mean, I don't think anybody's saying that. Are you saying that?
No, but what I want is first step, and not that I've ever really cared about this, but I think it's sort of emblematic of their issue. Mac Jones needs a guy. So the first step, a couple 100-yard receiving games, 1,000-yard receiving. See, did anyone have one last year? I can't imagine they did.
I don't think so.
And if they did, forgive me. But you know what I mean. Someone approaching 100 catches, you know, something like that.
Bill won't allow it.
That guy, well, Mac needs to have someone that he can feed. And that, you know, I think that's important for him. And not that I want you to become top heavy or, you know, dependent on one outside receiver. I'm generally against that thing. But I think I think Mac Jones needs a little bit of that. And maybe Parker brings it to him. All right, so there's your Devontae Parker follow-up. Right back to your calls on everything, right?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Do you believe in moral victories? A good loss? We'll get them next time.
No silver linings here on Felger and Mazz.
Then you are in the wrong place.
You have to accept that, so we...
Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I no longer trust, if I ever did, the ability of the Patriots to draft receivers. For as great as the Steelers are at finding receivers, isn't it amazing that that is the glaring Achilles heel of Bill Belichick and his group? I mean, they took Chad Jackson, who was a disaster in the second round, like in 2008 or 2009. They have been abysmal when it comes to drafting receivers. A point we've made in the past, is it an issue of drafting the wrong guys, or is it a failure to develop them? And does it boil down to simple Belichickian impatience? Get that son of a bleep off the field. He doesn't, you know... Let him play again when he figures out how to tie his damn shoelaces. You know, that kind of thing. Let's get a veteran out here who knows what we're doing and what we look for so we can practice these reps, so we can get through this day, so we can develop our defense, too, instead of having some guy with his head up his butt out here who doesn't know what he's doing. It could be that simple, that he just has no patience for a younger guy, kind of like John Gruden wouldn't have patience for a young quarterback. Maybe Bill Belichick doesn't have patience for young receivers, and they never develop. Can't just be they're picking the wrong card every time. It's got to be something more than we got the wrong guy. It's got to be, at some level, we're not doing enough to turn that guy into the player that he could be.
More analysis. Patriots' problems drafting receivers. You think he's got that wrong, Mass?
I don't think it's an issue of patience.
And against Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk,
I think historically, I would argue that Bill historically with young players is very patient.
They've been patient with N'Keal Harry.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and not just at that position. So, you know, we should probably just stick to wide receiver. But I think that Bill, a lot of times, will wait for a young guy to develop because he understands it's a process. So I don't think that that's it. I think his issue is... he doesn't go for the talent. He evaluates these guys on something other than physical ability. And at that position, it's really important. The farther you get away from the ball, the more it becomes about athleticism. I'm sorry. I think that that is just a basic truth of that league. It's the same thing at corner. So this is why, in a lot of ways, he's sucked at drafting corners over the years. He's had to go get them in other places because they're athletes. I mean, he drafted Devin McCourty as a corner, but he had to move him to safety. So I think it's just he doesn't value what a great receiver or a great, you know, player on the perimeter typically has.
All right, 617-779-0985. Brad in New Hampshire on Tiger Woods. What do you got, Brad?
Hi, guys. First time, long time. Calling on the miracle recovery and all the fawning over Tiger Woods. Waiting for somebody to ask him why his arms now are bigger than Bryson DeChambeau's and his head looks like Barry Bonds.
Seriously.
Just seriously.
It's a legit question. Wasn't he that same doctor?
Anthony Galea, wasn't it?
Yeah. His doctor got popped with performance-enhancing drugs crossing the border into Canada or vice versa, coming in from Canada. So he's got serious linkage to PEDs.
Well, whatever it takes to get back. HGH, roids, whatever.
I mean, I'm not going to hold it against them because, again, but if you want to call it for what it is, call it for what it is.
Yeah, and I even think the caller means like now versus, you know, 15 years ago, whatever. Like, I saw a picture of him. His biceps look huge.
He does. He looks diesel. Like, all he's done is push-ups and pushing weight.
Great shape. Looks in great shape. No, it's been a... miracle recovery. Oh, my God. The toughness, the courage, just the pure resilience. He walked the course. And it's a tough course to walk, too.
A lot up and down there.
Do you know how ridiculous it sounds to say that about a guy who golfed?
He doesn't even have to carry the bag.
He's not even carrying his own bag.
Murray and I had to do that.
Stefan in Charlotte on our sign-stealing thing in MLB. Go ahead, Stefan.
Hey, guys. I love the idea of this technology, but the minute you said it, I was laughing because all I could hear was Mike Tomlin screaming about Scott Dolak and some poor relief pitcher is going to be hearing Tony Mazz talk about cotton candy instead of getting a sign.
So it is a double-edged sword. Yeah, you know what? We'll reset it later on. But, you know, Major League Baseball is going to allow pitchers and catchers this year, starting now, to use a device where the catcher hits a button on his wrist and the pitch and the location is then beamed out to the pitcher, which is then verbalized. He actually hears the words outside fastball, you know, cutter inside corner, something like that. On a, not an earpiece, but something that's in his hat so he can hear what the pitcher is calling for. No more hand signs. So there's no more stealing signals, stealing signs. It should speed the thing up. But I'm just waiting for the tech to go bad. And now we're sitting there waiting around for the freaking nerd from the IT department trying to figure out the wristband and the headband and all of this.
Well, it's a matter of time. Again, I was listening to the Patriots Radio Network. Mike
drop
Tomlin.
The deuce on the outside, Zorner.
You know it's coming. 617.
Drop the deuce on the outside corner.
617-779-0985. Christian in Warwick on the Bees. What do you got, Christian?
I'm going to keep it short and simple. I think their power play sucks. The amount of talent that's out there, I don't know how it can be so bad. And if anybody besides Pastrnak could fire the puck over the blue line, that would be great because I feel like he gives it away more than he gets it into the zone.
So the thing last night was an absolute cluster. Did you watch any of this?
I didn't see all the power plays.
Oh, my God. There were a couple that were just pathetic. They couldn't even enter the zone trying the extra pass. Taylor Hall turning the puck over. Everyone turning the puck over.
Hall's been a mess on it for a while now. I mean, it sucked when Bergeron was out with that arm thing, but it should be better now that he's back.
It was a freaking cluster. But frankly, you know what? Not that I'm rooting for them not to score on the power play. They were too power play dependent the last several years. I mean, the year they went to the Cup, they only scored on the power play. It's usually the 5-on-5 teams that are the best. And usually, you know, that's usually a fairly reliable stat. The best 5-on-5 teams are the ones that do the best in the playoffs because it's mostly 5-on-5 in the postseason. You don't get as many power plays in the postseason. When the Bruins won the Cup in 2011, they were a 5-on-5 team. In fact, their power play was like, don't you remember, it was like record low?
Oh, yeah. No. Going into the final against Vancouver, I think it got better at the very end of that series. But they were historically bad in the power play.
And then I think the Kings won it the next year.
Correct, same deal.
Yeah.
Beating their record.
Correct, same deal.
With an even worse power play than the Bruins did the year before.
They were inept. They both were inept, and they won the Cup.
So the league has changed a little bit. I think they're calling more power plays and penalties in the playoffs than they used to. But I'd still rather be a 5-on-5 team. And it bugs the crap out of me that I can't just go to NHL.com and fire up their 5-on-5 stats like I used to.
I can get them for you.
Like, you know, they've changed it. And I don't know how I don't know where to find the information. It's one
naturalstattrick.com.
Okay, can you do it right now as I speak?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So this is why I like their lineup shift. That's why I think Pastrnak on that second line is so important. Charlie Coyle, that third line was working, et cetera, et cetera. This is, I think, another reason I'm giving them a sniff this year because 5-on-5, it feels like they're a deeper team, a better team. Their scoring is more balanced. Yes.
Because they are sixth in the league in 5-on-5 play.
Boom, there you go.
Yeah, and when I looked, I actually knew exactly where to get this because I looked it up after a few days of having Lindholm here.
Yeah.
The first two games with Lindholm, I think it was, they scored 8 of 10 5-on-5 goals in games. So they were 80%, which is an outrageously high number.
Do you have a tab there that can quickly tell me what they were last year and the year before?
Yeah.
So they're sixth this year. Last year they were what?
Okay, give me 1 second.
Click, click, click.
Okay, last year they were in 5-on-5 play. They were 11th.
Okay, down. I bet you that 2019 year, just give me that last one.
1920?
Yeah, 2019, the year they went to the Cup.
Okay, so 18-19.
18-19.
Okay, 18-19 in 5-on-5 play. Your Boston Bruins were...
Oh, boy.
Fourth.
Ugh. I thought they sucked 5-on-5 that year.
Me too.
Okay, well, either way, maybe that proves a point, though. That was the Cup year. So I think they won the President's Trophy, maybe the next. Well, whatever. They went to the Cup in 19, and turns out they were a good 5-on-5 team. 5-on-5 team is what I care about.
You want me to get 5-on-5 in the playoffs that year?
No. I mean, no, they were well, go ahead.
They,
go
were,
ahead.
They were fourth.
All right. Here comes an update from Big Jim. Your phones is at 617-779-0985 right after the headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
At the end of the day, it's still all about sports.
We don't take it seriously.
And whatever's on Jim Murray's mind.
Get over the persecution complex, you children.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Right back to your phones. Fabiano in Framingham on Tiger Woods. Go ahead, Fabiano.
Hey, what's going on, man? I just wanted to ask you guys legitimately if you think Tiger Woods actually has a shot at contending this week. And, you know, big fan, love your show. Thanks.
Okay, babe. I don't think so. I think it's just going to be a freaking, I don't know how to put this.
Dog and pony show.
Yeah, it's going to be just a
publicity stunt.
A complete sort of Tiger Woods fawning sort of. I'll come up with it in a second. I'm just not smart enough to give you the words right now. But
well,
no,
if all of this is true, that he's in this much pain and it's that difficult to walk the course, shouldn't he not?
Of course. But he's going to be out there. He's going to play it up. If it hurts, he's going to act like it really hurts. If it hurts just a little, it's going to look like he hurts a lot. If it hurts a lot, why are you even out there? And it's just going to be this thing, this Tiger Woods celebration. What are we celebrating? The fact that he was probably impaired again. Dangerous behind the wheel, cracked up his car, messed up his leg, came back from it, and can now walk a golf course. And for that, like profiles and courage, you know, bend over backwards for this? I have no use for that. If he contends, I'm in. Compelling. And I'll say this, if he contends, boy, is that a statement on the soft ass loser nature of the current tour. Like all you got, I mean, all these brilliant, brilliant golfers from around the world, this field of just, and I'm not being sarcastic here. I mean, these guys are, their skill level is off the charts. And there's just hundreds of these guys. And there's just so many elite, talented golfers. And this guy's going to walk in from the cold, you know, not playing competitively for a year and a half. And he's going to come out there and he's going to beat you. You're even worse than I thought.
It's the kind of course, though, that you can, in tournament, you can win with intangibles.
Yeah, of course, absolutely.
You know,
it's been happening forever.
So again, when it says, do I give him a chance? Sure. Yeah, 5%. I mean, 2%. I don't know. I can tell you this, though, that if we're any other guy under the same conditions, I'd give him less of a chance than I give Tiger. So do I want to see it? I hope he's in contention. I mean, I'm not in it for the love-in. I'm in it for the golf.
Tom and Quincy on the Red Sox. What do you think, Tom?
Yeah, I'm sorry. So I caught a little bit of Cora's comments earlier. A couple things are concerning. I mean, one, we know they're going to score a billion runs, but the comments about the bullpen situation where he's, because one, Diekman hasn't been impressive. He puts too many guys on base. The thing that concerned me is he said the velocity of Bonds and Brazier is down. Like, they get teed off on when their velocity is up. So I'm not sure what exactly they're going to do there. It seems like Whitlock's going to have to be even more important than he already is up to this point if those guys aren't going to go because they're useless pitching at 91.
Okay, Mass, your thoughts?
Well, look, Brazier again, if that's what he is, forget it. That'll be T-ball. And so, and Barnes, same deal. I mean, both of those guys, I would say, for the most part, need the velocity. You know, Brazier's got, well, they both have a little bit of a wrinkle, but look, I'm worried about the whole thing. I think the whole bullpen feels like a fire drill to me right now. If you were to say to me, who's going to open up in what role? My answer is, I don't know.
You've got some idea.
Okay, do you think, okay, so
Whitlock's going to be a bulk guy behind one of those.
Okay, so Whitlock we know.
Yeah. You said you don't know anybody.
So. Who else?
Well, start there. Tell me who else we got again.
Barnes.
Sauramora.
Barnes is not closed. Well, he might close, but
no.
He's not ready.
Brazier. Diekman.
Sauramora is going to be one of those setup guys. You know, going to grind the game to a halt in the seventh or eighth inning.
Okay, so again, but where are they going to use him? This is what I'm getting at.
Just, I mean, the analyst is going to get what the lineup is.
I understand.
And he's going to mix and match the matchups, and it's going to depend who the opponent is and who the batter is based on the analytics.
I understand all
so
of that.
I don't know what's in their three-ring binder.
Okay, but what I'm telling you is I don't know who is throwing the ball well enough right now to be able to line him up against the guys you want to line him up against. So this is – I have no clue. I have no clue what's coming. I don't know if Cora does. I mean, I have to believe he does. Like, he's got some sort of plan, but he has said he hopes that an opening day it's Evaldi for 5 and Whitlock for 4. Okay, so I think that tells you plenty, which is that he doesn't know who will get the ball in the other spots.
To me, it's up to Heim Bloom to figure it out. Raffy in Vermont on Tiger Woods. Hi, Raffy.
Hey, guys. Felgi, guys, explain me one thing. 2 weeks ago, the PGA had to give that man a check for $8 million because they felt like it's some kind of welfare program they have for a golfer who fell into hardship, didn't earn any money. So, but he received that check. Now, that tells me that they evaluate that man and they feel like, that man is not 100%. So, number two, this morning, all those grand knowledge guys telling me like, oh, Tiger, he's really every time, you know, he come first one to tee off, you know, in the morning, like 6 o'clock. But now, because they got to prop him up, they got to drug him up, he can only show up at 2:30. So that tells me this guy is not ready to go.
Is that true?
I'm telling everybody.
Rafi, thanks for the call. Is that true that he could only play in the afternoon because he couldn't play
in the morning? I haven't heard, but he did say that his prep time and after golf is requiring a lot more time. Like, to get him ready both the day before and the day of. That time requires more. Look, if he's getting preferential tee times and stuff like that, like, you know, then forget it. He shouldn't be playing. Because typically what they do those first couple of days is they flip you. You play one in the morning, one in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Or one early, one late, depending on, because this field is smaller than most.
Yeah, but would you blame the PGA or the networks trying to finagle that?
Yes.
Oh, I wouldn't.
Yes, I would.
Get those ratings.
But Murray, what I would say is, well, now you're bending it for him. And I wouldn't bend it for him. If you can't play, too bad.
And I have no interest in that either, other than, you know, this take, which is, isn't this kind of proving that Tiger Woods is bigger than the Masters?
Yes.
He's bigger than golf?
Yes.
He's bigger than the sport. He's bigger than this tournament, which is, I mean, a brilliant tournament. I've been a fan of the thing.
But he is.
I love the Masters. I think, the back nine on Sunday of the Masters is, to me, one of the must-see events of the year. We talked about this a lot. And I don't think people give two poops about it. They only care about Tiger.
You know, shame on the rest of the field and these stiffs that can't break through.
And that is so it.
But it's to your point, yes, it does. It proves that.
No one cares about anyone on that tour. Even the good ones.
I mean, everyone was pants off for McIlroy now, 6-7 years ago? Now he basically sucks.
It's one guy after the next who's supposed to be the next guy. He wins a couple tournaments, makes a bunch of money, and you never hear from him again. Rory, Spieth, Koepka, like, he'll be next. It's just one line of, these guys don't know how, I've been on this for years, you know how I feel about this, they don't know how to win. They're brilliant, brilliant golfers, incredible swings, incredible golfers, with no balls, no idea how to win. And I think that leads to a lack of identifiability. You win a couple tournaments, you go away, you never hear from them again, and then now it's the next guy's turn. And that's what the tour suffers from. And now you have the best golf tournament of the year by far. And way more people care about a freaking hobbled, addled Tiger Woods showing up for a practice round than the best players on the planet. He's bigger than the tournament. He's bigger than the sport.
Totally.
And he doesn't even play anymore.
I know. I have no problem with it.
I do like the kid that looks like Happy Gilmore's caddy, though. Will Zalatoris. Have you seen him?
Oh, I hate that guy. Seriously, that rail. It freaking looks like the wind's going to blow him off the course, for crying out loud.
Long commercial free segment is next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Website. This is the place Boston sports fans come to get some positive vibes for their teams.
Anything but. It's time to panic.
Well, maybe not. Now, back to reality with Felger and Maz.
This screamed to me that the Dolphins organization is telling Tua Tagovailoa, hey, bud, this is a one-year tryout. You got 1 year to figure this thing out. We brought in Teron Armstead. We brought in Connor Williams to protect you up front. That was an issue. We brought in Tyreek Hill, massive deal, fastest player in the NFL, to go along with Jalen Waddle. We got Mike Gesicki at tight end. We got Mostert at the running back position, along with Chase Edmonds, who they brought in. I mean, they have speed. They might have the fastest team in terms of offensive skill players in the entire NFL. And so now, when you look at this, the Dolphins have 5 picks in the first 3 rounds, including 2 first-rounders next year. And we all know what's waiting. Bryce Young, Alabama, and C.J. Stroud, Ohio State. Tua Tagovailoa has 1 year to prove that he's the guy moving forward, or else the Dolphins are going to package these picks, move up, and go get one of those top quarterbacks next year.
All right, I like half of the analysis. Todd McShay. All right, Tua, you got an offensive coach. You got a whiz-bang system, works across the league. You might have the fastest wide receiver core in the league. You got a good tight end. We've upgraded the offensive line. You can't make it work with this group. You're not going to make it work. That's it. 1 year trial. Here we go. I'm into that. I think that's right. Fair enough. Is the Dolphins' recourse then to go and trade up for one of these 2 college quarterbacks? Or is there another option on the table? Jimmy Stewart just returned from WrestleMania. I don't know what source pool he's been swimming in this weekend. Maybe not an NFL source pool. But what's the Dolphins' other option there, Stu?
I'm not sure that they have one right now.
Yeah, so I forgot what you reported at the end of last week. Brady in Miami's no mas, right?
Yeah, and Gasper confirmed it on Friday.
That is right, he did.
That Jimmy thinks there's an extension coming from Brady in Tampa.
That's still on the table?
I mean, it might be dummy years, but yeah, I think so.
Boo.
Boo.
It would have been so much more fun if he goes to the Dolphins.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, though. I still think the second half of that argument by McShay is flawed. Because, you know, first of all, I don't know that Miami has fully enough to move up to what it might take to one of those guys. Let's see how it goes. And then secondly, the quarterback market's changing on a yearly basis now. Lamar Jackson could be out there for crying out loud. So who knows? Maybe they go get Lamar Jackson. Then they really have the fastest offense in the league.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, you could have guys running all over the field then. Like, maybe that's what they're thinking. So I just think it doesn't necessarily have to be someone out of college. This is make or break for Tua. I think they've reached that point. I think that part is clear. So, you know, they're 3 years in. He's missed some time. He's been okay when he's been out there, but now he's got some serious firepower.
I think he's going to have a good year. I do. And then, you know, that would be tough for Miami because he has a good year. All right, we'll keep you. And he's still not really great. You know what I mean? Like, he's still not the guy. But he had a good year. They put up some numbers. They won some games. We don't want to start over. So now you're sort of stuck with a guy that's good but not great. That would be actually bad news for the Dolphins. But I do expect him to have a good year. So let's see how that all plays out. Back to your phones. Paul in Fairhaven. Hi, Paul.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, to answer your question, I don't think Bill Belichick is good at drafting wide receivers. I don't want him to draft one. I like all the specialty plays at free agency. But you guys had someone on who made a comment, you played it, that Belichick doesn't have patience to develop a wide receiver, but where's the history? They never draft wide receivers. And name another wide receiver that they drafted that was really good somewhere else after he left the Patriots.
It's true.
So to me, it's just another guy Bill Belichick walked by, wouldn't say hello to. Just another guy with a grudge.
So,
see, but this is why I don't think it's a patience thing.
Well, no, but that's just because the analyst was critical of Belichick doesn't mean that Bill was mean to him and that's why he's given that analysis. Their receivers suck, caller. So is it unfair to try and figure out why they suck?
No, totally fair.
I mean, again, as we said, I mean, I think Florio has it wrong, too. I don't think these guys are any good when they're drafted. But so you're saying that Bill's actually drafted receivers well. It's just that reporter has a grudge? Grow up. Come on. It's not it.
It's not because of an impatience, though. That's not what it is.
No, I don't think they Chad Jackson hung on for a couple of years, and Brandon Tate hung on for a couple of years, and N'Keal Harry hung on for 3 freaking years. It was, I think, obvious in 2 weeks that he couldn't play. So I don't think Bills lack patience at some other positions. I think cornerback Like Duke Dawson gone after a year. Cyrus Jones gone after a year. He's shown some lack of patience at other spots. Receiver, I think he hangs on to him maybe too long.
Yeah, I think the issue is he doesn't value what the position requires. And he tries to then, you know, find a way around it or whatever because he wants guys who are coachable and hardworking. And let's face it, receivers often are about athleticism. And Bill hates those guys.
He hates athletes.
He hates talent.
David in Nashville. Hi, David.
Yeah, hey, what's going on, guys?
What do you got?
Just wanted to know what you guys thought about umpires using the microphones. It's about time they use them. It's going to be a great idea. And it's about time that baseball communicates with the fans on the field because no one knows the rules or what's going on down there most of the time to begin with.
Okay, I totally disagree, but Maz, you first. So in case you don't know, folks, the umpire this year, like in football, is going to turn to the crowd and say, upon further review, the runner was safe at third base, or upon further review, the video was non-conclusive or whatever. He's going to speak to the crowd, going to speak and tell you what they're ruling on replay.
I think it's going to be good theater. I'm for it.
It'd be good sound for us.
Yes. Yeah, look, again, I know you don't like the mechanics of it. I don't think it's going to affect the pace of the game all that much. I think replay slows it down. It's not going to be the announcement that slows it down.
But one of these guys is going to become the Hockley of MLB. It'll probably be Angel Hernandez.
It's going to slow it down a little bit, 10 seconds, whatever it takes to, like, I'm counting every second.
But they should be, but again, while he's speaking, they're already going to be reviewing the play. You know what I mean? So I think there's just an overlap there. I think there's just something's going to happen now.
It's another layer.
So
it's another thing that could go wrong, another thing that they have to go do. And it's just baseball didn't do anything quickly. So if you give them something else to do, it's going to take time.
But I'll tell you, anything that adds to the television product, I think is good. So that, again, this is now I don't think this is going to change anybody's opinion of baseball. But I think the fact that it adds to the broadcast or adds to the television product, I'm in favor of.
Okay. But it's totally unnecessary.
Yes.
I mean, there isn't. In football, you need it because there's about 14 different penalties with 14 different hand signals. And not everyone is sure what it is. I mean, we are, but, you know, a lot of casual fans, 5 yards, 10 yards, 15, you know, what's this? What's that? You know, like the kid, they have to speak it. I get it. In baseball, out. Safe, and then home run. That's it. Foul. Like there's nothing to explain.
Well, I suppose you could. I mean, there might be some confusion over what's being challenged at some time. You know, but again, I just don't see how it hurts. Don't all the other sports do it?
Basketball started to with that awkward ref cam. You know, when he comes to the mic when he's explaining it, it's a flagrant one, flagrant two, whatever, and he's got the camera right on his mug there up against the scorer's table. So, yeah, basketball does it.
I mean, I just they're the only one that doesn't.
And hockey does do it, too. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, they're the only one that doesn't. So everybody's speaking to the viewer except baseball, perfect.
This one I don't need. This one I don't need because I just think it's going to take up more time. It doesn't feel like it should, but nothing feels like it should take up time in baseball, and it does. Fastball or curve takes forever. Which is why they're trying to address it with this new technology, which we'll circle back to.
This one is not a hill I'm going to die on.
Okay, we will reset our Red Sox thoughts right after Big Jim Murray gets you updated. 90 seconds, no spots. Don't go anywhere.
There was no foul on the play. It was not a hold. The defender was just...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.